Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Locked On Wolves podcast. There's always a moment right before I hit the record button and begin to talk in the mic. Which podcast am I doing? Oh, yeah, Locked On. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And joining me is favorite guest of the program among the listeners, maybe. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm sort of channeling my inner Zach Lowe when he has Kevin Arnovitz on. He always prefaces it with the best guest. You know, there's high demand for Tom Schreier. I met my family Christmas on Sunday. Dick Algin, Grandpa Dick.
Yeah.
Connection. Yeah, small world connections have tied Tom and I together. He goes, hey, that Tom guy's pretty bright.
That's the first time that's been said. Perhaps ever.
Yeah, so Tom comes in here. He's like, I got some pretty good feedback when I was on last. Some followers. So happy to have you back, Tom. Thank you very much.
No, it's been fun. Like I said, I wish this team was playing a little bit better because there's so many good people here in the market. But it's also just fun breaking down this team because it's starting to make sense. You know what I mean? I feel like for years, as much as Kevin Love got so much heat for that Yahoo article maybe back in 2012 where he said
he still owes Adam in like a month for the knuckle push-ups thing. Love does.
Really?
Yeah. We'll never let him go for that.
But he, you know, I didn't blame him for what he said there. They're like, what's the plan? And for years, you just looked at the Wolves and you're like, you know, this is an assembly of players who are very talented, but I don't understand how, you know, where a championship formula is here, where every conversation I feel like I have, and I really do try to pick the minds, especially of a guy like Britt or John Krasinski or some of these guys who've been covering the team for years, Jerry Zagoda, we're starting to see kind of how the picture comes together. And it's easy to make this analogy now, and I made it on the last podcast, but when people go, how are the Vikings 7-7? Well, a lot of us were talking, and, you know, Reef and Luke and Sam and the other guys in the media, they go, look, the O-line is bad. You know, there's some trouble with the run defense. There's stuff like that. And people only look at the surface level stuff, and they don't, you know, realize, well, you know, look, especially with the Wolves, they're so young. And at the same time, they need some more depth. I mean, Phoenix last night. What was that night? And who was the other guy who came off the bench and just torched?
You were there. I had the night off.
I know. No. And I will pull it off.
Brandon Knight, Alex Len, TJ Warren gave him 9 minutes. Barbosa, the Brazilian blur.
Yeah. Yeah. How old is Leandro Barbosa?
He's getting up there.
Yeah. So either way, their bench really was good. And you know, you look at the minutes that Tibbs, you know, he played four other guys, but actually Shabazz Muhammad, I thought, got more time than he deserved. He had a weird pull-up, too, and he, you know, he's still going after rebounds and stuff like this, but he just looks like a guy that needs a change of scenery. Barbosa's actually only 34, although in NBA age, that's kind of old.
That is, I mean, the way I put it last night, it was funny, because as the Wolves were closing out the 115-108 victory over the Phoenix Suns, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, the only team the Wolves don't seem to have trouble with, although it was close in this one, but
yeah.
Go back to the matchup in Phoenix. The Wolves handedly won that one in the second half, I thought. But the only team that they seem to not struggle with is the team I grew up rooting for. And
you have a picture. Go on Twitter.
No, I have. Yeah, you can see the picture on Twitter. But Leandro Barbosa was part of those Suns teams that I grew up so fond of. And
that's right.
Jared Dudley, too. I mean, it's not as significant as the Kevin Garnett thing when they brought back. But you know, the Suns are bringing him back. It was pulling on some heartstrings.
Right.
But as you said, the Wolves get it done, 115-108. Shabazz Muhammad plays 20 minutes, which is a lot for him, or any bench player standards, really.
Yeah.
He scores 8 points, ends it with a plus-minus of -3, 3-for-8 from the field. And I think the weird pull-up, too, you're talking about, because he's a lefty, so he's on the right block and he spins towards the center, but he's still a lefty, so it's almost like, you know, I'll liken it to a quarterback throwing across his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that, and it went in somehow. It was bizarre, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just kind of questionable decision-making. The more and more I see, it just seems like he now, I think I just said on the last podcast, Rubio's not looking like a fit, and yesterday he looked a little. Now, granted, I think Jang had a pass where he eventually threw it to Rubio, but Rubio was open in the corner, and there was a little bit of a hesitation, and then he kind of whipped it over there, and I think Rubio missed the shot, and there was another situation where he missed an open jumper and kind of a sort of important moment, but you know, the more I see it, it's just like Shabazz Muhammad seems like a very talented guy who probably just could use a breath of fresh air, and I don't know what his long-term fit would be here unless he'd be a dominant sixth man off the bench, which I know we always argue is, should that be Levine?
Or it if it's shouldn't
not,
be.
Or if it's not Levine, you probably could find that in free agency, right? And actually, that wouldn't be a terrible player to be kind of that. We talked about maybe bringing in kind of a veteran presence who has an outside perspective. Unfortunately, Brandon Rush just seems like he can't do that, being that he's injured and struggling to play. And Jordan Hill doesn't play, so he maybe offers something in the locker room. But he's
Jared Dudley would be nice. You got a good look at him last night. Yeah. He'd be an ideal fit for the Wolves' second unit right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless, you can kind of find someone else there. And I'm all about continuity. In fact, there was actually a really good article in Sports Illustrated about the Clippers. And I think it was Ben Golliver, but I can't remember who wrote it. Basically saying that, look, you know, the Clippers are rolling out the same cast of characters, but just adjusted their bench a little bit in the offseason and have seen improvements from certain players who were struggling last year.
Yeah, it's still awful, but sure.
And they're, yeah, I mean, I guess his
Most Bates, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. And
Austin
maybe
Rivers, meh. Austin. Jamal Crawford, still Jamal Crawford. I mean, continue. I don't mean to cut you off.
Regardless, I think the point being is that continuity is not always a bad thing, right? In fact, I think it's good. At this point, I don't know why you would unload Levine or Wiggins or certainly Towns, right?
You wouldn't.
You know, I mean, night after night, and I believe it's something like five or six consecutive games, they have scored 20 points each. And it just doesn't seem like any of them take a night off. There's certain plays they do. There's certain minutes perhaps they do. But night-to-night basis, with the exception of, I'm thinking of a Wiggins game a while back where he really shot poorly.
The New Orleans game.
Yeah, and which is
the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but
that was awful. 2 of 18 or something like that.
But to be fair, I mean, I think we have to have realistic expectations that some of these guys will have an off night every once in a while. But night in, night out, you know, they're always on. And you know, my question is just kind of, how does this bench form? There was a lot of kind of funny – I love basketball Twitter. It's maybe the only Twitter I like.
It's one of the best niche communities out there.
Right. No, I mean,
I don't always agree with them, but yeah.
No, I mean, it's just hilarious that – that guy Fenelon just cracks me up. Wow. Things he puts on his Twitter. But anyways, there was someone about, you know, being like, you know, Tyus Jones knocking on the door and being like, you know, Thibodeau, let me in, man.
Like, yeah. Like a meme.
And he probably, or maybe it was like fake conversation.
A gif.
Yeah. But just kind of the, I feel like they could have used him a little bit in the third quarter there. And I get that. I think Tibbs is very deliberately pushing Rubio and Dunn against each other, trying to make each player better. Dunn's shot looks weird. Is that just me?
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Which might be a reason why it's not that great, but I thought he got a breakaway layup that really got him going. He made a three after that. I mean, confidence was a big factor, but all of the shots I watched him take last night went in, which is the first time ever that that's happened.
And for anyone saying trade Rubio right now, I go, watch every game, because if you do, you realize – Dunn's good, then bad, then good, then bad, then good. Sometimes within a game, often game to game. So Dunn's not there yet, but I think maybe he's deliberately kind of pitting those guys against each other and seeing if Rubio can find a fit for himself. He wouldn't go as far as to say Rubio's starting to fit in my system. He said it's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing. But I, you know, Tibbs might be making some adjustments, but I don't see
I think he is, because there are plays where Rubio cuts from the corner and he does a little hook cut towards the free throw line and he'll either take that free throw jumper where he's very comfortable, or he finds himself that 15-foot range on the baseline. He's very comfortable there too. I mean, he hasn't connected on the corner threes, which is a problem in Tibbs' system, but I do think there are adjustments that have been made. He's sort of figuring out how Rubio plays and where he likes to shoot from.
I think some give and take. I think also Rubio being gone early in the season made Tibbs think a little bit more like, yeah, maybe I want this guy around. You know what I mean? I think Chris Dunn in the future really will be a good player. I don't know. You know, I think there's an adjustment period for him. And the hard thing, too, is that going back to the veteran thing, like, who really is his mentor on this team? Because
Chris Dunn.
Yeah, Chris Dunn.
Yeah,
I mean, it was supposed to be Brandon Rush. I think Brandon Rush explicitly said on that, you know, that media day or whatever, he's like, oh yeah, Chris Dunn's going to be my guy or whatever. But I think it's just hard if Rush is injured and can't play to mentor another player, right? At some point, he's looking out for himself too.
You could argue it's John Lucas. Because why the heck is John Lucas on the roster?
And you know what? To be fair to John Lucas, and you know, he got hurt, and I was like, when did that happen? But
you wouldn't know. I mean, Tibbs talks about how much he likes having players,
and
he's very practice players,
and he's very vocal. Yeah. I mean, even when he was in a suit last night, he's one of the first guys up.
He looks good in a suit, by the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know what? I think he maybe has a personality where he can keep things light when these guys do get really down on themselves. I mean, being in that locker room last night after going through these terrible losses after terrible losses, and the Houston one, I wasn't there. You were there. It was probably worse.
Videos up on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's – you could tell they're just kind of happier and more festive, and there's – these guys don't like losing. It has not become numb. It has not become routine. I really do believe that these guys really do have a they take it hard when they lose, and sometimes as much as you want that in some sense, you also need a player to be like, hey, you know what? We got a game tomorrow or a game in 2 days, and you can't dwell on this.
Absolutely.
And that's probably Lucas. So, I don't know. Interesting game. I know I came on the podcast last week and was like, the Wolves can make the playoffs. And actually, now looking at the standings, the Trailblazers, 13 and 16, are now below 500. But there was kind of this gap between the Blazers and now it's the Nuggets that has closed a little bit. I guess my point being is that there were a lot of bad teams like the Wolves, and they just need to beat up on these bad opponents and then teams in their division, and they can start to ascend. I was getting nervous when I watched the first part of the game, and it was 6-2, three bad, you know, I said two, I think.
Last night's game?
Yeah, last night's game. It was really three bad defensive possessions, and I think the difference, I mean, it's easy to point out the difference between Thibodeau and Mitchell, but Thibodeau calls a timeout there, and immediately the team ties it up, right, and gets back on track. Sam Mitchell sometimes would call a timeout, and I'd be like, what changed? Like, you didn't even change the personnel on the court. So I do, even though I know he yells, I think he's calmed down a little bit. It's hard to tell, but he yells excessively, and he has very complicated systems, and he offers a lot of direction. It seems like when he says something, it is starting to get through to the players. And I even noticed in one, and I know the Rubio haters won't like this, and there were plenty after that game, because you look at the box score and you go, well, Rubio didn't score 10 points. I go, watch the game, and you saw passes nobody else makes. I mean, yeah. I don't know what other player makes some of these passes, but he's in there yelling at him. And you know what? It's part on Rubio, too, to be that leader. He's a veteran at this point. He's older than a lot of those players. And if he's sick of losing, he's got to kind of do something about it in his own right.
Well, he has to be sick of losing. He's done the most of it, I think, of right. anybody on the roster. Yeah. He is in a tough spot, sort of a train-your-replacement situation with Chris Dunn and not fitting in the system. I mean, it's really hard to defend Rubio now because he's not a fit in the system. But when they were running post-entry stuff and running offenses out of, you know, post-up situations, kick it to the perimeter, Rubio is a lot better because he makes entry passes better than anybody else, and yeah. there's no way to quantify how well his passes are. I mean, when you pick up a ball off the rack, you grab it the same way every time, right?
Yeah.
When you're shooting around, you shoot it with the same way. Right. Well, in a game, it doesn't work like that. If you have right. to catch and shoot, you can't always spin the ball in your palms and make it go like that. Rubio will put it the way you take it off the rack into your yeah. hands. There's something to be said for that, but Chris Dunn, back to that point, he finishes 3 of 6, scores 8 points. I only saw 3 shots. I wanted to clarify. I didn't see all of his attempts.
Yeah.
Shabazz Muhammad, like I said before, 8 points. The starters, the big three, 28 from Towns, 23 from LaVine, 26 from Wiggins. I wanted to make mention of how that starting five, LaVine, Wiggins, Rubio, Towns, Gorgui, Zhang, have performed over the last 5 games. 128 minutes, 113.8 points per 100 possessions, 102 defensive rating, giving up 102 points per 100 possessions to their opponents, which equates to a net rating of 11.8, which is pretty damn good, all things considered. The team overall, offensive rating of 104.2, defensive rating of 109.2, net rating of -5.1. So it's when the starters are split up that the Wolves begin to struggle. So,
and this gets dangerous because we know Thibodeau will play starters excessively.
Yeah,
right?
What was I think Mark Stein put it out there on Twitter the other day, the top 5 minute guys, and yeah. One of them is Zach LaVine, another is Jimmy Butler, another guy that Thibodeau is notorious for having run into the ground, although
yeah.
I don't think any of his former or current players really have beef with him. Zach LaVine's the guy who would play the whole game if he was physically capable. That's just who he is. They have to almost, he has keys and will show up to Mayo Clinic Square in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And take practice shots.
He's misunderstood because he comes off as kind of this like goofy teenager, and I think when he's not playing basketball, I think he is. When he's playing basketball, I think he has more drive than it's kind of like Wiggins too. People go, well, he's quiet, so he's not a competitor.
He's sleepy.
And I've never seen that before. He can be a little bit unself-aware, which is bad, but I think he has competitive drive that people don't see. You could even say the same thing about Towns. Towns, like, probably will have a talk show when he's done playing basketball, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have this kind of fire. There isn't a player on the Wolves that I've seen that doesn't have a little bit of grit in their stomach, and maybe that's a little bit of Thibodeau, who literally has gravel in his mouth, I think, when he's talking. But, I don't know. I think Thibodeau has asked specifically why LaVine's playing so much. I think the thing is he plays well with anyone because he almost plays absent of context. Like, he just kind of does what he does, and if you know what he's supposed to do, he's useful. If you try to force him into a point guard situation or you're asking him to do something that's outside of his range, he probably is less comfortable. But at the end of the day, he's kind of that guy that if you need a shot to drop, he's going to try to take it, right?
Yeah, you're starting to see his athleticism really. He's growing into his athleticism, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he's got such lanky arms, which allows him to snake around pick and rolls, and he's really more used in isolation situations. Not quite the best pick and roll player yet. I could pull up some statistics, but it's really not too relevant. His high release point, because of those long arms, he can get a shot off over basically anybody.
Yep.
So they can use him in end of clock, shot clock situations, and he's a very useful player in that regard. You still think he should come off the bench?
Not right now. But
I think they've listened to the Locked On Wolves podcast, and they're like, all right, Tom thinks he should come off the bench. Zach demands he should be a starter, so we'll start him, and he'll play a lot of the minutes with the bench unit.
Yeah,
they stagger him that way.
Yeah, maybe that's the compromise. And to be fair, if you want some fluidity, you probably should have players that play with the starters and play with the bench guys, but or continuity, I think, is the word I was looking for there. But I see as a winning formula that Jang and LaVine, especially against bigger lineups, would come off the bench. Having said that, you have to have depth to make that happen. And the problem is your two trade chips right now that you'd be willing to part with and would have some value would be Muhammad, who I bet another team would look at and say, in the right system, in the right situation, maybe can play a little bit better than he is in Minnesota. And Rubio, who I think is part of a winning formula, however, as a starting point guard, maybe not. Depends really on the team. I think you could probably package them and get a decent player, but you're not getting someone groundbreaking. You can't package them and get that big center that you want or something like that.
You don't want to make a trade just to make a trade.
Yeah.
Shabazz is interesting, and I was I was being frankly serious with Jace Frederick, Pioneer Press, at the Rockets game. And, I was projecting some opinions onto him. Shabazz Muhammad is the same player he was when he came out of college. Maybe his skills, I'm inclined to say his skills have improved, if only slightly. But transition, corner threes, left block post-ups.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's not adopted any other skill set whatsoever. He can't handle the ball. He doesn't have any more spots on the court that he can shoot from. He's not good at making threes from above the break. He's the same. Like, he has not progressed or expanded his game at all. So he might be more skillful in the ways that he was skillful coming out of college, but in those areas, he's the same player.
Yeah, and there may be a team that goes, look, we want Rubio because he would dramatically change the game if we put him in as point guard, even if he's not starting. And
you have to try. If we're going to enter the realm of trade conversation, you have to try to bring him off the bench first.
And I think
you have to.
I agree. You know what? If I was confident Don Schott would just kind of fix itself, I'd really like that. The issue is it kind of sucks having two point guards that don't shoot well.
Yeah.
I mean, it just does.
And then the one that does doesn't ever play.
My very strong belief is that Tibbs knows what he has in Tyus Jones, and I think he really wants to find out what he has in Rubio and Dunn. I think that's why they're playing the bulk of the minutes. I think he has to think, because he's both the coach and this president, he has to think of the future and the present at the same time, which when we, you know, Flip Saunders was roundly criticized for taking the coaching job, kind of being like, we had a search and then he kind of found himself.
The longtime Wolves purists did not want that at all.
Right.
And they saw it coming, to their credit.
Yeah. And so I think he does coach a little bit like a GM, if that makes any sense. And so
it does. Yeah. It makes sense. I'm sure if you're saying he's taking the long view with the way he's playing the point guard.
I think a coach on a one-year contract who had a GM who was favorable and wasn't going to lose his job might play Tyus Jones more just to squeak out more wins. I think Tibbs wants to win, and to his credit, he wants to win his way, right? He's not going to compromise on things because he understands, you know, the coach and GM are going to be the same person for 5 years. And his goal, I think, is by year three to be considered kind of in that contendery spot, or at least, you know, a threat in the West.
They were considered that preseason year one.
Yeah. And again, Vegas had him at 40.5, and Vegas is often very right. But the other, the other thing is, I think he realizes if by year four things aren't coming together, people are going to call for his head, right? At least at the end of the season, because you can get rid of him on a 1 year deal. I still don't see. I mean, it's so hard to explain to people because very few people are watching, and those that are, I think, focus a little bit too much on Rubio and like individual pieces rather than the big picture. And those who know this stuff don't need to explain it to them. So I guess my point is, I think this is better than an 8-win team. And really, I go, as they creep towards that 48-win team, and look at what Tibbs said last night.
We can play the audio.
Yeah, just throw it up there. I don't know if it's in this clip, but it's nearby.
We're having lulls, but you know, we have to be a 48-minute team. And the fourth quarter is different. We have to treat it differently, and we have to understand the intensity of a fourth quarter.
That play with Towns with the two offensive rebounds and the putback, is that's...
Yeah, great multiple effort play. And
I pulled it up, by the way. Zach LaVine leads the league in minutes per
that's
game.
That's the difference right there between winning and losing. It's, you know, like we saw it in the Houston game, a loose ball late, Beverly comes up, hits the floor, Carl makes the play in that game. You know, so a small difference.
Not the quote you were looking for, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's really close to that. I, as you know, I'm a mass transcriber. No, that quote actually says more, but his first line was basically,
you know, like it's...
So that was the multiple effort one. You know, he said one of the things we were talking about is just finish it, finishing the game, finishing our defense, finishing our spacing, finishing the game. And we're having lulls, but we have to be a 48-minute team, and the fourth quarter is different. We have to treat it differently, and we have to understand the intensity of the fourth quarter.
So I didn't play the quotes you're saying before, but they get the gist. And you're in a hurry to get out of here, so the production value.
Yeah.
No, it's all good. The production value, 7 or 10.
Yeah, no, we have a cold Omaha meeting with our marketing team at noon.
I like the Zach Bennett clause included in our upcoming.
I know. But people, when I'm at a game, it's weird. You get a gamer when Zach Bennett goes to a game. You kind of get
warm. You never know. I keep you on your edge.
It's a wild card. It's a wild card. But anyways, as much as he's sounding like a broken record, I'm glad he's still saying we need to be a 48-minute team. He's not pretending that they're there yet. And as they creep towards that, they're going to be really scary. The other thing, too, is the fourth quarter, I do believe, is different. And the pressure does get to this team. And I love that I saw Towns make a big play at the end, LaVine make a big play at the end, Wiggins make a big play at it. That's when I – here's the thing. Talk is cheap, right? And while Thibodeau is saying the right thing over and over and over again, eventually his players have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's – almost an unfair thing to ask of a coach, but that is their job, and that's why Thibodeau makes this kind of crazy money, right? If anyone could do it, it'd be a 30K, you know, year job or something like that, right? You know, he has to figure out a way to get what is in his head onto the court. And to be fair, the players have continued to say, we need to perform, probably because they don't want Thibodeau to have breakaway pants and jump on the court at some point and try to play defense or whatever.
I think they would want that, because that would be entertaining.
But... my point being is that I like that these young players took the game into their hands in the right way, playing within the system but hitting the shots they need to hit.
My question to you is, because you're under the impression that Thibodeau is taking the long-term view based on, you know, what he's doing with his players, and because he has this position with two roles, as a hyper-competitive dude, Do you think he struggles with that internally?
I think there's a lot going on in
his
head.
That's a fascinating subject, and you can never really know, right?
Unless, you'd have to sit down and talk to him for a long time.
I was going
to
say, unless you're his therapist, if he has a therapist, that would you really have no idea how to how to gauge that. If he does indeed go, you know, did he think about it before the season? Did he have this plan? Did he decide what he was going to do? And now he's like, did he have that sort of you're driving to a 9-hour shift type feeling where, man, this is going to suck, this whole not winning as often and as much as possible. But, you know, in the long term, I'm going to have to keep telling myself that it's going to pay off eventually. Do you think he struggles with that internally?
I think a little bit. I think the way I read Tibbs, and this is just from limited interaction and reading a lot about him and his background, but
what do I need a wife for if I'm going to be a basketball coach?
Right. And not only that, but just in his actions. And I think he is slightly maniacal. Like, I think he, if not full-fledged maniac, like he, I think if anything, he has to be the way he is because I think he has 100 things going on in his head at the time and he just needs to fire it. And even how he answers questions in the postgame, which is completely separate from how he coaches the team, he answers, it's always and so. It's like, if, then, and it's very, like, methodical, right? And I think this is how he thinks, and he thinks it at a rapid pace. And if anything, I think the reason why these timeouts work and stuff is because he's just that much ahead of everyone else. I bet people who cover Dallas would say Rick Carlisle's like this. I think probably Steve Clifford's like this, maybe Van Gundy. I think there's a handful of these guys, the guy in Boston.
Brad Stevens,
in different ways, probably are like this, where he's so process oriented. Like, it's just even how he answers the question, it's and so. And he's making the connections for you. He's kind of a nutty professor at best, right?
If he snaps, he'll be like Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting. Do you know how easy this shit is for me?
Yeah.
When he freaks out about the on his math teacher. I think that would be him if he were to freak out.
And it just, yeah, I mean, I do just see this. He has all these little phrases and the, you know, like, obviously he has all these systems in place and stuff like that. And think about this. This is a classroom setting. Like, obviously you have some older players in there, but these are 21-year-old kids who in any other life, you know, like, would likely be sitting in a classroom learning from a nutty professor. And I think in some ways this is a match made in heaven.
Or drunk with Zach at the bar.
Yeah. One of the two. My point being, and those are not mutually exclusive, many people tread between both, including me, throughout 4 years of college. But
still got to celebrate your birthday.
I know. I've celebrated my birthday literally. I was telling you, I was out in Detroit with a friend of mine who has a birthday similar. I've celebrated my birthday, not really on my birthday, but just throughout the month, which is
if you're out, Tim and I did enough celebrating for your birthday over the weekend.
I appreciate, and Twitter knows that.
Yeah. AP John Krasinski knows it.
AP John Krasinski, by the way. celebrates on, or at least used to celebrate pretty handily.
Oh,
to my knowledge.
Interesting.
To my knowledge,
might
yeah.
have to do some due diligence.
But anyways,
you're talking yourself into being late for this phone call. You got this conference call. You got to make.
We're
11:47. Let's wrap up your point. We'll get out of here.
My point being is that in some ways it is kind of a match made in heaven that you have these students who, I mean, literally last night, Carl Anthony Towns was going, I don't really know the exact definition of a multi-effort play and how that's different from, and even, you know, like, I think it was Wiggins was kind of like, well, I think it's a play you make multiple efforts on, right? You know what I mean? But yeah. I don't think they know these exact definitions. And like I said, I think he's kind of this crazy, you know, he's this crazy professor who not only is teaching on the whiteboard, you know, if you walk in the locker room, you see a big Samsung TV, which is often playing film, and then, oh, you know, a whiteboard like you'd see in a classroom. Obviously, he erases it, but I've gathered over time that he's literally, you know, which is not anything unique. He's, you know, doing concepts and stuff, but I'm sure it looks kind of like a crazy professor's whiteboard. And he's trying to drill something that's very complicated, but that he understands very well into other players who, you know, these guys are 21 and trying to process things and played 1 year of college. And, you know, I mean, I've been through all multiple different systems because they probably had a, you know, you look at it, Wiggins had a high school coach, a college coach, and then I think a different coach every year in the NBA. It's going to take time. And I think the hardest thing for him is he wants it all to happen at once. I think if you asked him honestly, he'd say, I understand this and I want these guys to understand it as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And just to tie it all together, channeling my inner Zach Lowe, and you can be Kevin Arnovitz, they've talked about how hard it is. Well, it wasn't Arnovitz, but it was who's coach guy? David Thorpe.
Okay.
Thorpe was on with Lowe a couple weeks ago, and they talk about how hard it is to harbor and foster just one player and develop him into a superstar. You know, the LeBron Jameses, the Dwayne Wades of the world. The Wolves are trying to do that with three.
Right.
And it's really...
And arguably Dunn.
I mean, it's really hard to... I mean, Dunn's, because of his age, the potential, I think it's less.
A little different, yeah.
But it's different. They're trying to breed three... what analogy do I want to use here? What is the lead lion in a pack of lions called? The alpha male. They're trying to bring up three alpha males and have them coexist and succeed, and that's unprecedented, dare I say? I mean, a lot of the times when, or at least recently, like within the last 10, 15 years, big threes have been curated through trades and things like that, free agent signings. Never... has it been like this? Off the top of my head, I can't think of one. Tweet at Lockdown Wolves if you do think of one, listeners. But it's going to take time, as you said. So, speaking of time, we're out of it. You're going to be doing your professional business calling in the car, I imagine.
I believe so.
Before you get home. So I didn't mean to keep you so long, but you got long-winded and you walked in late.
It's your fault. It is my fault.
His name is Tom Schreier. At T-C.
No.
I already screwed it up.
T-S-C.
T-S-C. H-R-E-I-E-R. 3 on Twitter.
Yep.
You can follow Lockdown Wolves at Lockdown Wolves. Lockdown Podcast at Lockdown Podcast.
Cannon.
My name is Zachary Bennett at Zachary B on Twitter. We'll talk to you tomorrow. The Wolves are in Atlanta. So, in Atlanta right now, practicing probably. Studying film, doing all of the Thibodeau things, and they'll play the Hawks tomorrow. So maybe I'll coordinate something with whoever does Lockdown Hawks, or talk to one of the million people who covers the Hawks down there. There's a murderer's row of Wolves writers, or I'll do a recap. So we'll see. Until tomorrow, so long.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.